Matt Douglas and I both saw movies this weekend. Matt was able to see a movie I'm dying to see. You said it was good, right? Bad Times at the El Royale?
I liked it.
I wonder what Al Harris thinks about that, because I saw a movie that he approved of last week in A Star is Born. My wife loved A Star is Born. Al, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very intrigued by this whole conversation, because Matt, we will talk Bad Times at the Royale, because I actually did get to see it this weekend. But I want to pull, you hated Star is Born, didn't you?
I didn't hate it. I mean, it had its moments. It was okay. It wasn't great. But as I said in the opening segment,
he's not spoken highly of it around the office. I'll say that.
No, I mean, I didn't hate it. My wife loved it, and she puts up with my garbage from time to time. And, you know, my wife thought it was really well done. She thought that Lady Gaga was very, very good. She thought that Bradley Cooper was exceptional as well. So I could see how a lot of people liked it.
I don't want to hear why your wife liked it. I want to hear why you didn't like it.
I'm just not really into it. It was too chick flicky for me.
Ooh, can you say that in this political climate?
Sure.
No?
Sure.
Are you allowed to say those? You want to call it a chick flick? No, I'm just kidding. I disagree with you. I don't think it's a chick flick at all. I think it's a melodrama, which we don't see enough of. I didn't get that vibe from it. I didn't feel like it was too chick flick. I thought it was a very... There were some very masculine moments in that movie, so I disagree with you. I think it was very, the way they handled the addiction, the way they handled all that stuff is not chick flicky. We're really, you know, bringing this argument to the base we can by calling it chick flicky or not. But no, I disagree with you. Like I said, I thought it was great. I thought it handled those things well. I thought the music was good. I told you I didn't really love the pop star elements, but that's just because I don't like pop music. But, yeah, I thought the story was great. And did you not think Lady Gaga was good?
She was okay. I mean, I wasn't blown away by anything I saw in that movie. I thought it was all right. I mean,
you didn't think the chemistry between her and Bradley Cooper was really good and really took that movie to another level, which you didn't, obviously, because you didn't like it. But
no, I thought it was all right. Now, I will say this. I was very intrigued watching the previews. There are some really good movies on the horizon here.
That was the best part of the movie for
you.
Well,
for me,
trying to get out of this argument. All right, keep going.
Well, okay, so this loaded me up with some questions, not only for today, but in future weeks as well. Now, there's not enough time today to dive into that Vice movie, which I think looks pretty awesome. We'll get into that, the whole transformation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great.
I think it's going to be awesome. So we'll dive into that later. There's not enough time today. But there was also a preview in there about Clint Eastwood's new movie coming out called The Mule. Boy, the previews looked fantastic. Is this going to be his last one?
Well, before we get to that, real quick, one last thing on A Star is Born. Right now, that is your probably front runner for the Academy Awards, Bull. So just want to let you know that now, since I know how much you didn't like it. That probably right now is one of three options for Best Picture, and I think right now the front runner for Best Actor and possibly Best Actress, but we'll get back to that as we get closer to the Academy Awards. But I think Mule does look good, and you've got to think that this has got to be his last, maybe not last directing, but definitely last starring. This is his first time acting since 2012, I think, the movie Trouble with the Curve, which not a lot of people saw, but this time he's actually directing it and starring in it. And he's, I think, 88 years old, man. I can't see him. Like, I'm shocked he's not only acting in this movie, but directing, doing double duty on this movie at 88. That's just insane.
See,
and, yeah, I don't see him going much past this. But who knows? It's Clint Eastwood, man. I thought his, after that whole RNC thing where he was talking to a chair and it kind of looked like he might be slightly delusional, I thought that might have been it. But, you know, he's still making good movies. I wasn't a huge fan of American Sniper, but that did really well. And I think this might be his first directing movie since then. So, and it looks like perfect for him. Bradley Cooper's back. It's got a great cast. I'm intrigued by it for sure. And, yes, I do think it will be his last starring movie. Maybe not directing, but definitely starring.
This is, and oddly enough, as much as I harp on the fact that people aren't as original out there anymore, this is Clint Eastwood doing Clint Eastwood. I mean, even in his older times here, I mean, Gran Torino. That's what the character reminds me of. Gran Torino, Million Dollar Baby, that grizzled, old, kind of still action-y sort of guy.
Well, see, he's been doing this for 30 years.
I know.
This is what he did in Unforgiven.
Yeah,
which
you're right.
I thought might have been his last movie back then. That was, what, 92? So that was what? I'm trying to do quick math here. That was...
That's about 26 years ago.
Yeah, and I thought he was done after that. That was like his old, the old men are not done yet type movie. And I was like, oh, okay. The movie's great. Maybe he'll do something. But no, he's still ticking. But yeah, it's the same themes. It's the same character. But I'm still intrigued by it. It's Clint Eastwood. As a fan of, you know, the old spaghetti westerns he did and some of his... I mean, I haven't been as big a fan as his later stuff. Like, I thought Mr. Glenn was overrated. Most of them I thought have been overrated. But, yeah, of course I'm going to go see this. And, of course, I'm excited to see him keep doing this. And that's the thing is... well, I'm going to get ahead of myself, but the same thing with this movie of Old Man and the Gun that has come out with Robert Redford. And you also see someone like Jack Nicholson, who hasn't acted in so long and just kind of like stopped acting. It's great to see these, you know, stars from the 60s still acting, still putting out movies, and still doing good work. Obviously, you don't want to see, you know, them doing bad roles, kind of like Jack Lemmon towards the end of his career. But like, Paul Newman was the same way. Acting in decent movies towards his end, and you just don't know when the next time you're going to see them is. And the fact that, you know, in the last 20 years or so, we've gone away from these kind of movie stars that they bred in, like, the 50s and 60s, you know, and 70s. And so times are changing, and it's still great to see this on the big screen when we get the chance.
Al Harris, our Hollywood guru, is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. You brought it all the way around to The Old Man and the Gun, so we'll go there next. The previews look really good. I have not had the chance to watch this yet, but I'm really, really interested. This has got to be Robert Redford's swan song, no?
So this movie has been on my list for a while. I know it came out. It's limited theaters right now. I've been dying to see it, just haven't gotten around to it. It's basically, for people that don't know, it's about, I think he's about 80 years old. It's about an 80-year-old bank robber who's just a nice guy who likes to rob banks and does it very courteously. but he's been doing it for years, and this is kind of his swan song as well. I think it's based on a true story. And unlike Clint Eastwood, Redford's actually come out and said that this will be his last movie. So, and I tend to, you know, you hear that a lot from people, but I actually tend to agree that to believe this one. I mean, he's 82. He's got a lot of other stuff he's working on. But this is a great movie for him to go out on. It stars him. It seems to really show the charisma he has left. It's a reunion of sorts with director David Lowery, who I think is unbelievably underrated. He does smaller movies. The only big mainstream movie he did was Pete's Dragon, which felt like an indie Disney movie, which Robert Redford was in. And so I think it's a great movie for him to go out on. It's just a shame it's not getting as much publicity as it probably should. It's got like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's, like I said, unlimited theaters. Not a lot of people are talking about it. There hasn't been a big marketing campaign behind it, so... it's kind of a shame that this movie's supposed to be really good and the fact that it's his last movie and it's kind of just existing and not getting the publicity I think it deserves.
Al, earlier in the interview, you referenced Bad Times at the El Royale. Matt Douglas saw it this weekend. He thought it was pretty darn good. You said you saw it as well. What were your thoughts?
I liked half of it. I thought the first half was great. I'm trying to not say any spoilers. But no way in the world should that movie have been 2.5 hours. And I felt like it definitely dragged towards the end. I was not saying bored by it, but I was just like waiting for it to go ahead. I think it teased like more. Like, I don't think the twists were twisty enough. I honestly, once Chris Hemsworth became a big part of the movie, I thought it started dragging its feet. But that being said, I thought the first hour was fantastic. And there's a couple set pieces in that movie that I think are some of the best I've seen in a long time. I thought the way they used music was really interesting. I thought it looked great. The production design was great. But yeah, I just thought the story dragged towards the end. And towards the end, I was just ready for it to end, which I didn't expect to have that feeling about an hour in. What did you think, Matt?
I actually really liked it. I thought it was one of those movies you leave the theater and you continue to think of. Character development was... I don't typically go for when you're trying to make a bad guy seem good to me, and I thought they did, and I thought they had success in that with the Jeff Bridges character.
Yeah.
Without giving away too much. And then also the young man who was the clerk in the movie, you kind of think he's going to be sort of that central guy everyone wants to hate, and in the end, you kind of end up loving the guy. So I thought that was fascinating on it. I also like things that it, almost like in Pulp Fiction where they open the briefcase and you don't know what's in it. I kind of like that mystery to it. And of course,
well, it definitely felt like it was
does a lot of that
taking a lot from Tarantino. It almost felt like a remake of Hateful Eight in a way. It felt very much similar to that. I actually liked it more than Hateful Eight because I didn't like Hateful Eight at all, really. But I just, like I said, that movie, there's no way that movie should have been 2.5 hours. Towards the end, I was just, I guess I didn't realize it was 2.5 hours till it ended because I didn't check the runtime beforehand.
Yeah, me neither.
And I was just like, why is this movie dragging? Like, I just didn't know. And then when I walked out, I was like, God, that movie is that long?
Sure.
Here's the thing, is when you have a noir like that, you have something like that, I like those to be, you know, a little quicker because it's all about pacing. It's all about, you know, keeping the theater goers on the edge of their seat. And when you slow down with a lot of character building and that stuff, which, mind you, is my favorite thing about movies for the most part, I don't think in noirs they necessarily work. That was my problem with Hateful Eight as well.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I had my issues with it. That being said, I would still recommend it because I thought the first half was that good, and I also thought the performances were spot on throughout the entire movie.
Visually,
so,
I thought it was cool. Whoever did the set design on that movie is brilliant. I thought the hotel was fascinating to watch. Also, it was a lot different than I thought it was going to be going into it, as you and I had mentioned. The director, the writer of Cabin in the Woods, I kind of thought it was going to have that appeal to it. I think it did in a sense, but obviously much different than what Cabin in the Woods was set up to be.
No, I agree, and I will leave. Oh, we'll stop talking about this on this note. Right when I left the theater, the first thing I said to my friend was, "It felt like, as you said, with the production design and like the cinematography, everything. I thought all of the parts were really strong. I just didn't think the whole added up to it all. That was my problem.
Yeah.
I didn't think with the sum of the parts equaled the whole. That was my thing. But that being said, because of all the parts being that good, I recommend it.
Sure. And I'd agree. It did drag at parts, but like you said, I think it's worth watching. I'd pay $10 to see it.
Agreed.
Al Harris, our Hollywood guru, is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Al, the next question I'm going to ask you, we have to do the best we can to take the politics out of the equation, as tough as that might be here, but unfortunately they factor in somehow, some way. So, taking politics as much as we can out of the equation, what are the realistic expectations for the Conners? It seems like there's an awful lot of intrigue here.
Well, here's the problem, right? And as mentioned earlier, and every time I'm on here, I'm like, oh, politics, it's really hard in this political climate to talk anything without some sort of politics. And this is even harder because it really exists only because of politics. But you also had The First Man, which came out this year, which didn't do great in box office, and some people are saying that might be due to this American flag issue of that movie. And that didn't do as well in the box office, so even though it's getting amazing reviews and is also one of the front runners for Best Picture with A Star Is Born, it was third in the box office. So people aren't sure if it's because it's a space movie or if it's because of the politics. And this is a long way of saying the same thing with the Conners. Like, it's getting good reviews right now. But how's it going to do with viewership? And that's really interesting to me, is like how, because you saw how good Roseanne did that first week. She came back, right? And part of that was due to it being one of the few conservative leaning, I guess you could say, or at least conservative, like understanding conservatism products on TV. And so now that they're kind of, they got rid of Roseanne, and I'm sure they're not going to, it's going to be leaning much more liberal. Is the viewership still going to be there? And this is really going to be interesting to see how it does. Because if it does well, and does as well as Roseanne, which I don't think it will, if it does as well, then it's like, okay, we can throw politics out the window. But if it doesn't, and it's getting the reviews that I've seen so far, it's going to be due basically to politics. So it's a really interesting one where I don't think the viewership of this show matters on the quality of the product. I think it matters entirely on politics. So it's really hard to not discuss politics when you talk about the Conners.
Understood and unfortunate at the same time. If a show is good, then it's good. Just take the politics and throw them out the window. I wish we could get past that, but I agree with you. That's very difficult to do, especially with this situation. All right, Al, I know there was a lot of other ground we wanted to cover today, but we're getting towards the end here, so there's a lot of good stuff on TV. There are a lot of great movies to watch at the box office. I feel like there was a bit of a logjam there this weekend. And there are a lot of interesting things to watch on these streaming devices as well. What are your picks to click for this week, my friend?
Well, right now, I mean, this week's not as good. In, like you said, now the box office is really picking up speed. I didn't even get a chance to see First Man. Sisters, Brothers, up and down to see Old Man the Gun, so this is a great time to go to the theater. There's a lot of good movies, and I'm definitely missing some, not including the ones we have already talked about. But the way the reviews are going with the Conners right now, I'm very intrigued by that. You have Making a Murderer Season 2 coming out this week as well, on Friday. Those are the big ones right now. Like, nothing I'm super excited about. I never saw the first season of Making a Murderer. I've never been a Roseanne fan, so. But those are really the big ones coming out this week. But this is also a great time to catch stuff that has come out that you haven't yet. 22 July came out last week. The new Paul Greengrass movie is exclusive to Netflix, which I heard is really good. There's also, you know, I can't say enough about Season 2 of American Vandal. I thought it was fantastic, just as good as the first season. I recommend that. BoJack, recommend that. So yeah, now's the time to really catch up on things that have come out with kind of a lull in programming this week. Go to the theater, watch some old shows that you haven't gotten a chance to, because like we said, from now until the end of the year, it's just going to be nonstop in the box office and on TV. So now's a good time to catch up on old stuff.
Good stuff as always, my friend. Al, we appreciate the time, and we'll do it again next Monday.